All right, we've been doing a series on how do we know that we're in the last days. You know, Peter raised the question. He said there'll be scoffers in the last days that'll throw that right back in your face and say, well, you guys have been saying that from the beginning of time, you crazy Bible believers. But there are several indicators in that Bible that really do confirm the fact that we are in the last days. Now, the last thing that we studied is the alignment of the nations. And we talked about the rise of the revived Roman Empire. We're going to give that a little more treatment tonight. Intensified anti-Semitism. And then the King of the North, the rise of that. Now, we just gave this a cursory application, but we're going to do a whole lesson on this guy right here in the not-too-distant future. Russia is in Bible prophecy. So Russia won't go away. And then the kings of the East. And we're seeing a great rise in that in this day and age in which we live as well. But tonight, I thought I'd do something in a bit of review. Go to the book of Daniel, if you would, in your Old Testament. Now, Daniel is a book of Bible prophecy, and it's often been called the Revelation of the Old Testament. And that's probably an accurate description. But Daniel touches a little bit on the alignment of the nations as well. And as we examine and compare two chapters, at least portions of two chapters, chapter 2 and chapter 7, we'll see some interesting things. Now, I've taught some of this when we were going through the book of Daniel. But a lot of folks weren't here then. And for those of you that were here, you forget stuff. Right? So this is... It's a little bit of review and reinforce some things that we need to remember that will fit hand in glove with this whole picture of the alignment of nations. The Bible is an amazing book, and the statistical probability of the prophecies coming to pass that we have seen develop just in our lifetimes are so astronomical it's hard to even put a numerical figure on it. But be that as it may, here it is. And that's one of the things that makes this Bible so absolutely fascinating. As I've suggested to you in the past, you can't find one concrete, hard rock, come-to-pass prophecy in the entire Quran. Makes you wonder why anybody reads it. Oh, come to think of it, they don't. You know? But they're not there. The Bible is unique in this regard, amongst many others. Now, Daniel is a book of prophecy, mostly end time stuff. Look in Daniel 12. Daniel 12, just to get an idea of what we're talking about here. Daniel chapter 12 and verse 4. But thou, O Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book, even to the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased. You see what the Lord's doing right there? He's giving us a hint when the end is. Two indicators. Running to and fro. Ever been on a freeway? Did you ever drive through Colorado Springs or Denver or Seattle or Portland or, Chicago or New York City or Miami or Philadelphia and say, where are all those people going? Yeah. Why aren't they, don't they have homes? You wonder. You know what it is? Have you ever been in a big international airport? I mean, Chicago O'Hare or JFK or, just woo, 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 going to and fro. The world is just going to and fro. And then the other thing is knowledge shall be increased. Doesn't say wisdom, says knowledge. Well, that's the advent of Mr. Google. And all the things that go along with it. Knowledge shall be increased. So you can find out just about any... I mean, you can find out how to make an atom bomb on the internet. So you can learn just about anything you want to learn right there. I mean, it's a phenomenal increase in knowledge. That's the accumulation of information. Those are indicators of the last days. And he said, now this book is going to be sealed up even to the time of the end. All right, now... The first real definitive book written on the book of Daniel that is anywhere close to right was written just about 100 years ago by Clarence Larkin. And before that, very little information on Bible prophecy, you know, except in the Bible itself. So just, you know, I think his book on Daniel came out about 1912 or something like that. So just roughly 100 years ago. And then all of a sudden the things started to take off and more people started to jump on that bandwagon and say, wait a minute, we're starting to see some movement in some areas that are bringing us to the end. Look in verse 9. And he said, go thy way, Daniel, for the words are closed up and sealed till the time of the end. Daniel is a book of prophecy, and it was pretty much opaque in its vision as far as mankind's ability to see the real technical value of it until the last days. And so, as I've suggested, in the last 100 years, all kinds of light has been given by the Holy Spirit on these ancient texts. Now let's go to Daniel 2. Daniel 2. All right, so the king has a dream. King Nebuchadnezzar. And he can't remember the dream, and he can't figure out what the dream was. He needs somebody to tell him the dream and interpret the dream. And all of the astrologers, soothsayers, and all the religious heavyweights in his kingdom can't produce. He threatens to kill him and make him like a bunch of cow manure. And those are essentially his words, not mine, see? And so all of a sudden someone says, hey, wait a minute. There's someone here in your kingdom that might be able to help out, O king. Verse 25, Daniel 2. Then Arioch brought in Daniel before the king in haste and said thus unto him, I found a man of the captives of Judah that will make known unto the king the interpretation. And the king answered and said unto Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, art thou able to make known unto me the dream which I have seen and the interpretation thereof? And Daniel answered in the presence of the king and said, the secret which the king hath demanded, cannot the wise men and the astrologers and the magicians and the soothsayers show unto the king? I don't know if you picked that up. Daniel's being a little sarcastic right there. Daniel's having some fun, isn't he? You know, oh, wait a minute. You mean all of the Ivy League professors that you have at your disposal can't help you there? You mean the guys at Harvard, Princeton, and Yale can't give you a little light on that subject? You know the thing I appreciate about God? Many things, but one thing I appreciate about God, he loves sarcasm. He recorded it, didn't he? He says, you mean that all your heavyweights can't help you out? But there is a God in heaven that revealeth secrets and maketh known to the king Nebuchadnezzar what shall be in the latter days. Thy dream and the visions of thy head upon thy bed are these. So here he goes. He said, I'm going to tell you what you dream. As for thee, O king, thy thoughts came unto thy mind upon thy bed, what shall come to pass hereafter. All right, so this is prophetic in nature. What's coming to pass hereafter. And he that revealeth secrets maketh known to thee what shall come to pass. But as for me, this secret is not revealed to me for any wisdom that I have more than any living. But for their sakes, that shall make known the interpretation of the king, that thou mightest know the thoughts of thy heart. Notice Daniel is quick to give all the credit to God. He said, I'm not any smarter than anybody else. But God is the one that reveals and gives the secrets. Thou, O king, sawest, and behold, a great image. The great image whose brightness was excellent stood before thee, and the form thereof was terrible. Now, we don't have time to delve into this element of it tonight, but this is all repeated in the tribulation. This is something that the Antichrist is going to utilize, a great image of himself. Nebuchadnezzar is a type of the Antichrist, you see. All right, he sees this great image. This image's head was of fine gold, his breast and his arms of silver, his belly and his thighs of brass, his legs of iron, his feet a part of iron and part of clay. Thou sawest till that a stone was cut out without hands, which smote the image upon the feet that were of the iron and clay and brake them to pieces. Then was the iron, the clay, and the brass, and the silver, and the gold broken to pieces together and became like the chaff of the summer threshing floor. And the wind carried them away. Then no place was found for them, and the stone that smote the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. This is the dream, and we will tell the interpretation thereof before the king. So, hopefully you got it, this great image. And the head is gold, the chest and arms are silver, goes down to brass, legs of iron, and then the feet a mixture of iron and clay. And then all of a sudden, a great stone comes out from the heavenlies and breaks the thing to smithereens like chaff in the threshing floor, and it blows all kinds of directions. Now, as we're about to learn, these picture the kingdoms of the world. You know, don't put too much faith in politics. Amen? You know, I don't care who's president. Don't put too much faith in politics, because it's all going to get blown to smithereens someday. And the Lord is going to replace all of the kingdoms of this world with his kingdom. And that's what's being demonstrated here. But now, verse 37, thou, O king, art a king of kings. For the God of heaven hath given thee a kingdom, power and strength and glory. You know, if a king has a kingdom, even if he's a bad king, even if he's so bad and intolerable that he's representative of the Antichrist, it's still God that gave it to him. Yeah, even Obama. Do you think Obama would be in place if God didn't allow him to be in place? Not for a New York second, see? So, it all works that way. And wheresoever the children of men dwell, the beasts of the field and the fowls of the heaven, hath he given unto thine hand, and hath made thee ruler over them all. Thou art this head of gold. Hey, Nebuchadnezzar, you and your Babylonian kingdom are representative by this great image in the head of it. The head is gold. And after thee shall arise another kingdom inferior to thee, and after a third kingdom of brass, which shall bear rule over all the earth. And the fourth kingdom shall be strong as iron, for as much as iron breaketh in pieces and subdueth all things, and as iron that breaketh all these, shall it break in pieces and bruise. And whereas thou sawest the feet and the toes, part of potter's clay and part of iron, the kingdom shall be divided. But there shall be in it of the strength of the iron, for as much as thou sawest the iron mixed with miry clay. And as the toes of the feet were part of iron and part of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. And whereas thou sawest iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves. Now watch the pronouns. It gets real interesting. They. Words mean things, don't they, folks? They shall mingle themselves with the seed of men. But they shall not cleave one to another, even as iron is not mixed with clay. And in those days of the kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. For as much as thou sawest that the stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, and that it break in pieces in the iron, the brass, the clay, the silver, and the gold, the great God hath made known to the king, which shall come to pass hereafter, and the dream is certain, and the interpretation hereof, thereof sure. So, what the Lord has just done here, through Daniel, is lay out not only the existence of the Babylonian kingdom and its political superiority at that time, but succeeding kingdoms that were to follow. Now, you can understand why 500 years ago, our spiritual predecessors would have had a hard time figuring all that out, you know. But 2,000 years ago, it would have been even much more difficult. See? 500 years ago, not so hard, but difficult enough. But we have the advantage of hindsight. Somebody once said, hindsight's 20/20, right? So we have the advantage of history. And as we compare history to what the Lord has told us here, we now see that the thing was perfectly synchronized and put together. Now, Babylon. Babylon as a mighty kingdom existed from 606 to 536 B.C. It was a relatively short kingdom. The specific gravity of gold is 19.5. You know what this kingdom was? It was an absolute dictatorship. Absolute in every way. One man was in charge. And his will was performed no matter what his will was, good, bad, or indifferent. He was the total, complete, unalterable, absolute authority. Absolute dictatorship. You know, in reality, the absolute dictatorship's the best form of government there is. Notice this is the head of gold. There's just one problem. The dictatorship is only as good as the dictator. That's the problem, isn't it? All right, now, let me show you something. I said it's the best form of government. when Jesus returns and establishes his kingdom, what kind of government will it be? It's going to be just that, an absolute dictatorship. But then the dictator will be perfect. His name won't be Castro. You see, his name won't be Putin. His name will be King Jesus. And then you'll have a perfect government. And it obviously has its problems. But the kingdom that followed that, which is represented by the chest and arms of silver, was Media-Persia. All right, now ancient Babylon is what you and I call today, geographically, Iran. Media-Persia is what we call Iraq. You see, that's interestingly, those kingdoms are still in existence. You know, almost makes you wonder if there's going to be some kind of a play in the future with these same kingdoms. Because doesn't the Bible have a unique way of recycling history? It sure does. And so Media-Persia from 536 to 330 B.C. The specific gravity of silver is 10.47. Considerably less than gold. All right, now, you know what it was? It was a military dictatorship, or sociologically speaking, it was an oligarchy. Now, an oligarchy, by definition, is ruled by few. Now, you pick that up in other chapters in the book of Daniel. Now, Daniel and his colleagues were hauled off into Babylonian captivity when Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonians were in charge. But it wasn't too long thereafter, in the lifetime of Daniel, that the Persians overtook the Babylonians. Now, let me put this in context. When the Iraqis overtook Iran. Anybody watching the news? Now don't get too excited about your Bible. You'll turn into a nut. People will reject you as being a social deviant. You know, it's not good. You want to have some fun? Go into a busy restaurant with that Bible about that big and just lay it down there and start reading it while you're drinking your coffee and eating your dinner. Watch how people will try to say, could we sit over there?
I just read out loud.
That's okay. That's good. All right. So this thing is a military dictatorship or an oligarchy as defined, not only sociologically, but in the book of Daniel itself. Now, the next part of the image is a midsection of brass, and that is a picture of ancient Greece. From 300 to 100 B.C. The specific gravity of brass is 8. So we've gone from 19.5 in gold to 10.47 in silver to 8 in brass. Now, Greece was a military democracy. All right. Some people say, well, democracy is the best form of government. Well, maybe not if you just follow the image here and how the thing is working out, see. All right. But Greece was this the time of Alexander the Great and the great so-called high points of the Greek civilization and society. Well, that was followed by two legs of iron. And, of course, that's a characterization of Rome from 100 B.C. to about 476 A.D. The specific gravity of iron is 5. We seem to be on a downward spiral, don't we? You know, I believe in evolution. That's quite a statement for a Bible-believing preacher. I just believe it backwards. I don't think anything's getting better. I think it's all getting worse. You know, that's the direction of it, including mankind. You know, I think now Daniel said we'd be increased in knowledge, but not increased in intelligence. There was a great Hebrew scholar of yesteryear, and I mean a great, great scholar. And had a handle on Hebrew like few men have ever had. And that was his native language. And he studied in comparison to many other ancient languages. And the guy wrote a fascinating book I read years and years ago. I can't even remember the title of the book. But there's some conclusions that he came that I found rather astounding. And one of his conclusions was, based on his knowledge of the Hebrew language, Adam's ability to name all the animals, and he went through all hundreds and hundreds of animal names in Hebrew, and began to show all the nuances and the variations and so on that those names suggested. So here was his conclusion. He said Adam must have had an IQ of about 2,000. That's pretty heavy. When the average IQ today is barely over 100. You with me? Yeah. You know, and so if you just extrapolate 6,000 years and figure 50-year generation, more or less, and go backwards and then come on down, I mean, from 2000 to where we are today, two more generations, it's just dumb and dumber, boy. I mean, yeah. I mean, you know, it could be bad. And if you really study the Bible, that's the way the thing works. God says everything's going downhill, not uphill. Societies, governments, kingdoms, mankind. You know, when you get your incorruptible body, it's going to, I'll guarantee you, it's going to take you a while to get used to it. You're going to say, whoa, whoa. Not only will it feel good, you'll really be smart. Won't that be a blessing? Now, to quote the preacher I heard last night, that'll be a huge blessing. Won't it, Linda? We were just commenting this. I was in a church up in Colorado Springs preaching, and the preacher was giving all the announcements, and everything was going to be a huge blessing. I thought, man, I'm about blessed out. I just need a little blessing right now, you know. But we were just having fun, that's all. So the thing is a downward slide. Now, Rome was classified as a republican monarchy. Two legs, eastern and western branch. That's what happened to Rome. See, it divided eastern and western. Rome, Constantinople, you know, how that thing works if you have any awareness of history. All right, so that's exactly the way history worked itself out. You had Babylon, followed by Media-Persia, by Greece, by Rome, as far as the dominant kingdoms of the world in times of antiquity. But then, fascinatingly, now this is a five-part image, you see. Five parts, the head, the chest, the midsection, the legs, and then the feet. A mixture of iron and clay. Well, the specific gravity of clay is 1.93. That's a long ways down the ladder from 19.5 gold, isn't it? You know, maybe that's why clay isn't worth a whole lot, as opposed to gold. Now, you know what the feet are? The feet are an extension of the legs. That's what they are. You know, yours. When I was in my youth, growing up in Colorado, you got to learn how to ski, right? And I remember when I was just a young man, some of you said, no, I never learned how. Well, it is now. It wasn't then. You know, but by the way, if you're old like Stan and I, you can ski free now at Monarch. What is it, over 70? Yeah. And we didn't even go this year. What's the matter with us? You say, why are you talking about skiing? Because a good ski instructor will tell you, you've learned how to ski when you feel like those skis are just an extension of your feet. They're part of your feet. You know, you're moving them like they're part of your feet. Then you've about conquered the thing, you see. All right, feet are an extension of the legs. Now, these feet of iron and clay mixed together represent yet a future kingdom that has not fully developed, but I believe is in its development stage even as we speak. It's the revived Roman Empire under the leadership of the Antichrist, which will be a democratic, socialistic kind of kingdom. That's this outfit right up here, the revived Roman Empire. That's the bunch right there. And we are seeing the gelling of that as we speak. Now, having said all that and examining Daniel 2 for a little bit, let's do a comparison because it's fascinating to look at Daniel 7. And of course, the stone that smashes these kingdoms is none other than Jesus Christ. Because one day when he returns to establish his kingdom, he's going to smash the world's kingdoms into smithereens. And you know, isn't that going to be quite a pleasure to see? I mean, God doesn't need the United Nations. Yeah, well. But you and I can't eliminate it, but he can. He can and he will, see? All right, now, Daniel 7. In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream and visions of his head upon his bed. And then he wrote the dream and told the sum of the matters. So Daniel's having a nighttime dream, and it's not even too much garbage pizza. This is a thing that God gave him, see? Daniel spake and said, I saw in my vision by night, behold, the four winds of the heavens strove upon the great sea. And the four great beasts came up from the sea, diverse one from another. Now, interesting, on Daniel 7, they're coming up out of the sea. Now, that fits in Revelation chapter 13 in the last day's setting and scenario. Because the Antichrist comes up out of the sea, you see. All right, now the sea in Revelation is a picture of the multitudes of people. So, here he comes. Now, it pays to watch these things closely. Now, this first beast that he sees was like a lion and had eagle's wings. I beheld till the wings thereof were plucked and it was lifted up from the earth and made stand upon the feet as a man. And a man's heart was given it. And behold, another beast, a second like to a bear. And it raised up itself on one side and it had three ribs in the mouth of it between the teeth of it. And they said thus unto it, arise, devour after much flesh. And after this I beheld, and lo, another like a leopard, which had upon the back of its four wings of a fowl, and the beast also had four heads, and dominion was given it. We'll get to the next beast in a little bit. Now, what a lot of, not all, but a lot of the Bible commentators have done over the years is this. They say, okay, we've got the beast of Daniel 7 and the image of Daniel 2, and we know they match up somehow. So they take the lion, the first beast of Daniel 7, and match it up to the head of gold, Babylon, in Daniel chapter 2. The problem is there's only four beasts in Daniel 7. There's five parts to the image in Daniel 2. So four doesn't match with five. You got a problem. And what they forget to consider is, by the time we get to Daniel 7, you're at the very tail end of the Babylonian kingdom and right at the cuspice of the Persians taking over. So Babylon is no longer of any consequence as far as this particular prophecy is concerned. So the lion doesn't match with Babylon. The lion matches with Persia. And then it fits. See, otherwise nothing fits. And it makes more sense when you begin to realize it, because remember now, Daniel is a book about the last times, according to Daniel chapter 12. And even though we have this interesting history that we've already rehearsed, we got a lot of last day's significance that was held in abeyance and opaque vision until the last days. And so as I've suggested to you, I can't show you an effective commentary on the book of Daniel written before 1900. And then all of a sudden, some people started catching on to this stuff. And one book and another book and another book. And so today it's a pretty well known and established fact. So the lion, no question about it, matches with Persia. A lion with wings was the symbol of Persia. Now, you've seen on Fox News, if you ever watch it, ISIS is ripping apart some of that stuff over there, some of those great antiques, and taking sledgehammers to them and front-end loaders and everything else and banging them all apart. And I happened to notice one day they had this great, big, huge stone, and that's exactly what was inscribed on that stone, a great big lion with wings on it that they were ripping apart. You see, someone's trying to obscure the truth. You know what that thing's called? A lion with wings? A griffin. That's right. Do you know what the symbol on the shield of England is? It's a griffin. You're right. A lion with wings. Isn't that quite interesting, you see? All right, so the English coat of arms, a griffin or a lion with wings. And then, of course, part of English mythology is Richard the Lionhearted. Ah, just a coincidence. Don't get too excited about this stuff. You might have to go home and watch TV or something. You know. All right, you know that in history there have only been two decrees from kings in all of history for the Jews to return to Palestine? Two. That's all. One was given in 536 B.C. by Cyrus of Persia, a Persian king. And that was led by Ezra and Nehemiah. Those two books in your Old Testament are dedicated to that that exodus from ancient Persia back to Israel to rebuild, first of all, the temple and later the walls of the city of Jerusalem. And then the second order or decree given for the Jews to return to the land of Palestine was given in 1918 by an English king, the Balfour Declaration. Just a coincidence? Well, maybe not. Now, the lion was powerful and impressive, but it lost its power. Its wings were ultimately plucked. You got to be watching this thing. See verse 4 again. The first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. And I beheld till the wings thereof were plucked, and it was lifted up from the earth. And a man stand upon the feet as a, and made stand upon the feet as a man, and a man's heart was given it. So, we can expect what the Lord has shown us here is that England has some kind of significance and a part in last day's prophecies, but it's still connected some way to Persia. Persia cannot be discounted. Well, I think we know that just by observing the news. All right, let's look at this next critter right here, verse 5. And behold, another beast, a second, like to a bear. And it raised up itself on one side, and it had three ribs in the mouth of it, between the teeth of it. And they said thus unto it, arise, devour much flesh. How many of you have ever seen a cartoon in a newspaper, a political cartoon, characterizing Russia with a picture of a great bear laying on its side with ribs in its mouth? How many of you have ever seen that? All right, I got lots of witnesses here. Where'd they get that? Where in the world did some political cartoonist ever come up with the idea, oh, I know, I'm going to draw a picture of Russia. What am I going to draw? Well, I'm going to draw a picture of a bear laying on his side with three ribs in his mouth. Just sounded reasonable, huh? You know, sometimes God puts thoughts and inspirations in people's minds that don't even know the Lord. Nebuchadnezzar is a great example of that. You know, they don't know where it came from, but here it comes. All right, so the bear, in Bible language, is a picture of Russia. Now, interestingly, that would match Russia with the brass part of the image, which is Greece. Are there any similarities? A Russian alphabet is essentially a Greek alphabet. If you know a Greek alphabet, you essentially know a Russian alphabet with minor changes. They're essentially the same. The official church of Russia is the Greek Orthodox. I wonder if that's just a coincidence, you see. But it is. Both countries are and have been historically characterized by promoting an atheistic philosophy. That's ancient Greece. That's Russia. Atheistic philosophy, you see. The three ribs would picture the crushing of three countries. Russia's not interested in crushing anyone. They have no interest in that. You know, they don't care about Ukraine or Georgia or not much. You know, you and I live in exciting times. And when you learn what's in that Bible and begin to apply current events and current politics to that Bible, the whole thing just comes alive. Someone asked me last night at Colorado Springs, well, what do you preach to keep people's interest? I said, I just preach the Bible. I don't know what else to preach, just preach the Bible. I think it stands on its own 2 feet, doesn't it? I don't need anything else, frankly. So, we have Russia right here. Russia has a significant part in Bible prophecy, not only in Daniel, but also over in the book of Ezekiel. And we'll get to that when we talk more about this fellow right up here, the King of the North. And we'll examine that in considerable detail. All right, but let's look at our new beast, verse 6, or our next beast. And after this I beheld, and to another like a leopard, which had upon the back of it 4 wings of a fowl. The beast also had 4 heads, and dominion was given it. Well, then this leopard has to match up with the legs of iron. Now you recall the legs of iron were Rome. Is the United States of America an extension of Rome? Let me see. Allegedly, it was a boat. I think it was the St. Mary, Santa Maria, that discovered America. We are primarily Roman in our government. We have a thing called a Senate. I think Rome had one of those. And now we got a Caesar. I'm not even kidding, folks. I'm being serious here. I mentioned this recently to you, but let's run it by again. We're Roman in our education in a lot of ways. Now, some of you are old enough to remember, and you wondered why at the time, and you still do, why you had to learn Roman numerals in school. I had to learn them. And for years and years and years, I used them when I was writing outlines. You know, Roman numerals. You still do? Yeah, they're on the clock. Yeah, that's right. They're on a lot of clocks. You're absolutely right. We're Roman in our entertainment. Giant Colosseums. Isn't that right? And we just keep building them, don't we? You know, we're doing everything but throwing the Christians to the lions. Yeah. We're primarily Roman in our religion. The predominant religion in America to this day is Roman Catholic. Isn't it interesting that they're not Eastern Orthodox Catholic? They're Roman Catholic, you see. The U.S. is an extension of Rome. But that's not all. A leopard is an integrated animal. He's an animal of 3 colors. Yellow, black, and white. His basic color is yellow-brown. His belly is white, and he has black spots. He's an integrated animal. Isn't that what America has become? An integrated nation, don't you see? All right, so we are an extension of Rome in more ways than we probably care to think or realize. And now, there's some speculation here, which is interesting. This leopard has 4 wings on its, 4 wings of a fowl. I've often wondered about that. It doesn't say 4 wings of an eagle. 4 wings of a hawk. It says 4 wings of a fowl. Is that what we are becoming? Is that what we are becoming? Ah, that's just speculation on my part. Don't go to seed on that, okay? But another thought is this. One commentator that I read years ago, and he may have a point. He may have a point. He said those 4 wings are 4 appendages. Right now, geographically, America has 2 appendages. Alaska, Hawaii. Look for 2 more. Puerto Rico's a possibility. Philippines is a possibility. Even Cuba is a possibility. Look for two more. Now, I don't know if that'll come to pass, but I think the guy had a pretty good point. You know, it was certainly worthy of observation. The beast also had four heads, and dominion was given to it. In other words, this appears to be the last superpower, the leopard, until something else takes over. What is it? Verse 7. And after this, I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, and strong exceedingly, and it had great iron teeth. It devoured and brake in pieces, and stamped the residue with the feet of it. And it was diverse from all the beasts that were before it. And it had 10 horns. And I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another little horn, before whom there were 3 of the first horns plucked up by the roots. And behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great things. All right, now what appears to be taking place right here is that this beast seems to be a combination of all of the above. Notice they lose their dominion. Verse 12, look down verse 12. And as concerning the rest of the beasts, they had their dominion taken away. Yet their lives were prolonged for a season and time. So even though the previous kingdoms ultimately lose their great dominion, they continue to exist at the pleasure of the introduction of this new beast. This great, horrible, and dreadful, and terrible beast. Which, we don't have time to get into all these horns and the little horn and everything else. But what that is, that's a representation of the European common theater coming together undoubtedly with the United States and conforming this confederated kingdom under the leadership of the little horn, the Antichrist. The Antichrist. This is his kingdom, the revived Roman Empire. And we've lived long enough to observe that. Go to Revelation chapter 13. Revelation 13. Revelation 13. Some companion passages that shed a little more light on the subject. Verse 1, and I stood upon the sand of the sea. Here we are in the sea again. Remember those beasts came out of the sea in Daniel 12? All right. And I saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns. We got horns again. And upon his head 10 crowns, and upon his heads the names of blasphemy. And the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard. Uh-oh. We just found a leopard, didn't we? So he's like a leopard, but he's a combination. Notice, and his feet were as the feet of a bear. Oh, we had a bear. And his mouth was the mouth of a lion. We had a lion. So this beast here in Revelation 13 seems to be some kind of a picture or representation of the combination of the three that we just read about in Revelation or Daniel 7. And the dragon, that's the devil, gave him his power and his seat and his great authority. And so these kingdoms are ultimately unified under the leadership of the Unichrist. Unichrist. That's not a bad name for him. He's going to be a Unichrist. Right? You know, you can't possibly stand up and teach for 45 minutes without misstepping somewhere down through the trail. I mean, a lot of words. Amen? All right. You knew what I meant, didn't you? Yeah, okay. And verse 3, and I saw one of his heads, as it were, wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed, and all the world wondered after the beast. So this Antichrist is going to be assassinated. You know what the devil knows? The devil knows that he can sell his propagation best by imitating as closely as possible what the Word of God says. He's a great imitator. So as Jesus was assassinated, so will the Antichrist be assassinated. and there's going to be a deadly wound to his head. Now, that's pictured historically in the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr., JFK, President Lincoln, and on and on and on. You see that thing? You have that thing laid out in types, you see. All right? And so this head is wounded to death, and a deadly wound was healed, and all the world wondered after the beast. So they lay the guy in a grave, and mark it down, 3 days later, out he comes. Now, don't you know, all this being on universal satellite television, the world is going to say, I mean, talk about being totally twinkle dusted. They will be. They will be. All right. And they worship the dragon, which gave power unto the beast. And they worship the beast, saying, who is like unto the beast? Who is able to make war with him? And there was given unto him a mouth, speaking great things and blasphemies, and power was given unto him to continue 42 months. So this is going to take place somewhere in the middle of the tribulation, the Antichrist, which has consolidated the kingdom of the lion and the bear and the leopard, is going to be assassinated, and Mr. Larkin believes, and he may be right. That's a fascinating study. Man, you want a real mind blower. But he believes that he's going to be buried in the empty king's tomb in the pyramid of Cheops. You know the Great Pyramid? See, when they busted that thing open, nobody was buried in the king's chamber. And everybody, all the archaeologists said, well, you mean they built this whole great big magnificent thing and nobody was ever buried there? It might be reserved for another king. Now, Larkin, he was a brilliant scholar. He really was. And he shows you how that pyramid is right smack dab in the center of the world's continents. Right in the middle of the world. There it is right there. Do you know in World War II, our aviators learned that they had to fly way around that thing. They couldn't fly over it. You know why they couldn't fly over it? It made their instruments go whack-a-doodle. Yeah. Did you ever study pyramids? I don't have time to tell you much. That king's chamber is exactly one-third of the way up. You know what Russian soldiers discovered in World War II? If they built a model pyramid exactly dimensionally the same as the Great Pyramid, only, you know, just sized down, and put something in there one-third of the way up, they could put their dull razor blades, which they almost never were issued by the Russian government, in there, leave it out there overnight on a moonlight night, and in the morning they'd be sharp. You think I'm pulling your leg, don't you? No, I'm telling you now, you know, obviously I don't have any personal experience with it, but that's what I've read in more than one place by allegedly authoritative sources. There's some strange things about pyramid. You know what a pyramid is? A pyramid is a imitation of the universe. If you study the New Jerusalem over in Revelation 21, what the New Jerusalem is two four-sided pyramids put base to base. You know what God calls that thing mathematically? A city four squared. And if you four square a thing, that's what it's going to look like. You think the Lord knows what he's talking about? At any rate, we got off on a tangent there.
I know, but I like it.
And you like the tangent? Okay, put an extra dollar over there, will you please? Now, so we have this, here's the real meat of the thing. We have this leopard, which seems to be the last one having any dominion, but the leopard has the feet of a bear and the mouth of a lion. So, transferring the information we receive in Daniel 7 over here, we see some tremendous similarities, and they all get consolidated into the kingdom of the Antichrist. All right, go to Revelation 17. Revelation 17. Now, verse 1, and there came one of the seven angels which had the seven vials and talked to me, saying unto me, come hither, I will show unto thee the judgment of the great whore that sitteth upon many waters, with whom the kings of the earth had committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth had been made drunk with the wine of her fornication. So he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-colored beast, full of names of blasphemy, having said heads, seven heads and 10 horns. And the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet color and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls, and having a great cup in her hand full of abominations and filthiness of her fornication. And upon her forehead was a name written, Mystery Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and the abominations of the earth. And I saw the woman drunken with the blood of the saints and with the blood of martyrs and of Jesus. And when I saw her, I wondered with great admiration. Admiration in the Bible doesn't always mean that he admired her, only that he wondered with amazement, you see. All right, now, this text has been traditionally interpreted as an application of the Roman Catholic Church. And I could show you 5 dozen authors that have made that application, you know, in studying it. Well, what's her primarily color? Red, scarlet, and purple, you see. Very wealthy, gold, precious stones. I remember 30 years ago seeing a lengthy article in National Geographic magazine about the wealth of the Vatican. And I mean, just phenomenal wealth in gold and silver and so on, real estate, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And historically, been responsible for the martyrdom of many, many, many saints. You know anything about the medieval Inquisition? You know anything about the Spanish Inquisition? Why, you know anything about the Fox's Book of Martyrs? Well, then you learned about some of that stuff that has taken place. However, in my estimation, what the Lord does here is he calls this woman that has historically been applied to the Roman Catholic Church as Mystery Babylon the Great. Mystery Babylon the Great. So it has to be observed that God's still calling it Babylon. Now, God knows the name Rome, doesn't he? He got a whole book called Romans, you know? God knows Rome, but for some peculiar reason, he chooses to use the word Babylon. Now, it certainly has an application to the Etruscan Babylon mystery religion, you know, which dates all the way back to Nimrod in the book of Genesis and brought forward. And, you know, if you read Hyslop's book on the two Babylons, he'll show you how that so many of the traditions in the Roman Catholic Church were adopted from ancient Babylonianism. He'll show you that. I mean, he'll show you purgatory. He'll show you celibacy of the priesthood and the nuns. And he'll show you holy water and all that stuff. It's all that's not recent inventions. That's thousands of years before Christ was ever born, you see. That was part of an ancient Babylonian religion that has just been fast-forwarded into the day and age in which you and I live. And it's a fascinating study. But he still calls it Babylon. Wonder why. Well, when we study Babylon and the kings of the East, we'll find out more. What I look forward to, and I mean, what I anticipate happening is, what you're going to see in the not-too-distant future, is a great confederation of Babylonianism, which, to the political arm of the Babylon Empire, is what we call today the Muslim arm. That's the political arm. And the religious arm is Rome, and one day they're going to get confederated. Been working on it for a long time. Been working on it. That's information for another night. But you're going to see. Now, the Antichrist is going to have a worldwide religion. In other words, a religion, not everybody's going to adopt it, but it's going to be so dominant that it's going to be the singular, powerful religion in the world. Now, if you combine those two, what would you have? You'd have a worldwide religion is what you'd have, see? So you got at least 1 billion people in each religion. Minimum. So, hey, don't we live in exciting times? You know, lift up your head, your redemption draweth nigh. Now there's one thing left for us to do. Snatch as many out of hell as we can. Win as many as we can. Isn't that right? Care for the perishing. Send the light. That's our job. That's our responsibility. You all know I like politics. I study it, comment on it a lot. Write an article about it every week in 8 newspapers. But I don't for a second believe politics is going to save the world. I don't believe that for a second. The only one that's going to save the world is King Jesus. Amen. Aren't you glad you're on his side? Amen and amen. All right, hopefully this helped you a little bit, just to circle the wagons and see how all of this is coming together.